I thought I'd need to get you on tape saying, hey, are we starting this thing? I know you want to get some controversial good bits in there for the beginning of the show.
This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Right, listeners, orient yourself to the forefront, accurate believers. Trying to steal some Marvel noise. But here we are, folks, episode 535 of Indie Comic Book Noise. Today you're in for an unusual alignment of hosts. This time, United States outnumbers Canada. Three total hosts, 2-1. We have in the house Super Steve from the bunker. Say hi, Super Steve.
Hello.
And myself, Andrew the LA Rabbit. Facing off, counter juxtapositioning is WWX Kev from the Icebox. Say hi, Kev.
Not that breezy of a summer.
Yeah, someone's been cheating and listening to previews of episodes. Sadly, Phil, the Ottawa Otter, is off fighting forest fires, we're guessing.
There we go. Fighting tornadoes.
He's taking cover under the Rideau Canal and the safety of the otter's den. I will try to continue beam transmissions to get him on board, but fingers crossed for the otter. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. What's that, you say? It's a collection of wonderful podcasts about all sorts of geeky interests. As you heard from the beginning of the show, we sometimes have strong language and adult themes as commensurate with the all-encompassing nature of what could be considered independent comic books. But I say we never say anything controversial. Sometimes Kevin says something controversial right here.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
You can find old episodes, show notes, and the occasional link when Kevin doesn't go in and mess with my show notes at indiecomicbooknoise.com. And also whatever fine podcast catcher. I don't think the podcast catchers, though, will have all the show notes is the only thing. And like I said, when I can find a link or something, I try and slide it in there. As noted, this show is about anything and everything independently comics. So if we're talking about old comic books, a lot of times I don't have a link, and a lot of the stuff Kevin brings up is pretty obscure. Thank you, Silver Sprocket website.
I mean, they are a famous publisher.
They help me with a lot of links to some of that stuff. But we are unsponsored here, ad-free, just a couple of fine fellows shooting the breeze about indie comic books. Because I've done the intro out of order, I've forgotten if I've covered everything, so let's just assume I have and move on. Oh, I guess big thanks to Derek, the big boss of the Deliberate Noise Network. I should always throw in a shout-out to him. Maybe I'll add him to the shout-out notes.
Did you mention that we're Indie Comic Book N?
No, I did not
you
talk
still
about
do
our
that?
Social media presence. The show is on...
We're not on Spill, as far as I know.
The show is on Twitter and Facebook. Some of the hosts are on Twitter and Facebook. Some of the hosts are not, but they're on Mastodon and Blue Sky instead.
How's that doing?
Oh, it's going great. Yeah. Those things will be around 100 years from now. No doubt about it. It's fine. Blue Sky and Mastodon are fine. Look, I understand some people need these things for networking, business, promotion. I do not, so I can take a cavalier attitude about the whole thing. For me, it's just fun, but I do empathize for those who have built up substantial contacts that they need for a business reason, and then all this kind of messing around with them is hurting their bottom line. For me, it's just a goof, so I don't mean to, but I know that for some people it ain't.
Yeah, for me, it's just a goof, so when They go, hey, all these celebrities endorse this new thing where you see random stuff. I'm like, that serves no purpose for me.
And I was hoping Phil would be on the show, but I did want to shout out, and I'll put this in the show notes. Previously, we had talked about the Cthulhu Invades anthology and the Kickstarter launch page for the next one, Cthulhu Invades Neverland, is out. And if I'll either put that in the show notes or the actual Kickstarter if it starts. I think we're getting close to getting caught up on episodes, people. I know every time I say that, I do miss.
I hope so.
to pointless delays and that. But I'm hoping to get us back on track.
Is it still 2023?
Yeah, exactly.
I hope so.
I think so.
I mean, we might need some eight balls or something in here to get us back on track.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's when this will go up. Right now, it's 2021. And no, only joking, folks. We're not that far behind. All right.
Let's not go back to 2021.
Super Steve, where are you at? What do you want to start off this luxurious roll?
Sure. I'm holed up in the bunker, as you can imagine, and happily been perusing a bunch of different indie comics. I got a few to offer up here on this episode. One is, and I think you'll appreciate this if you haven't mentioned it already, Rabbit, is Jimmy Robinson's Junk Rabbit series from Image.
I have the first four issues, but I have not. I think the first, at least the first three. I think the first four are out, right?
Yeah. Four are out. Although it is going to be a mini series. But so, have you read them though?
I have not. I was letting them pile up. I have a bunch of another rabbit related.
So then
book.
I'll keep it to the vague pitch that is intriguing enough on its own. I think. Imagine an urban legend, seemingly superhuman, rabbit-based ninja commando with armor and weaponry constructed from junkyard scraps, getting into the crosshairs of the post-apocalyptic ruling establishment and having to survive being compromised and, you know, continue to fight the good fight that he or she has become an urban legend over. There's lots of world building, but it's not until like the third or fourth issue. So they follow the formula of keep the characters few and keep the events fast flowing and get you invested and moving into the story before they hit you with the history. Because then by the time you hear the history, you want to hear more of what's going on, especially if you're reading it in one big chunk. It's well-paced. It's fun. There's this rabbit samurai hero of the people that is a cool character. The art's good. The storytelling overall is solid. So I am not familiar with Jimmy Robinson, but I have found this book really entertaining, colorful, and a fun little ride. And very rabbity. I think you'll dig it.
Boy, I wish this is the episode for Phil. I know he loved Bomb Queen, which was, I believe, Jimmy Robinson title.
Oh, okay. I remember Bomb Queen.
No, I have the Magician's Rabbit from Scout Comics, so it's a great time for rabbit-based comics.
I also have a comic with a rabbit in it.
I have another one, too, so we can keep it going.
What have you got, Kevin?
Are we going to do our thing, or should I do something solo?
It's up to you. However you want to go.
Do that thing that you do.
At the top of the stack, I have Void Rivals.
Hey, I read that. I wanted to get Frosty a little bit, but I can't really hate. I had to pay a premium to get this.
Really?
Yeah. My regular store didn't have it, so I went to another one. But I paid it because you want to know what? For the stores to find a hot book that's not some weird, like, character death or something or whatever. I don't know. I can't really hate. I feel like Kirkman does these weird stunts. And so if the store makes a couple extra bucks, well, how am I going to hate on it? You know what I mean? Yeah. It seems like it's a hard time. I don't really begrudge anybody. If I really wanted it, I should have pre-ordered it or whatever, so...
I didn't pre-order it. I didn't even get it at my shop. I just assumed there would be a lot of copies out there, and there was, and I got one.
Yeah, I didn't get one at my shop either, but the shop I went to saw it. They had marked it up a couple bucks, and I was like, you know what? I'll pay it. I'll pay it. I want to be in on this thing. It's exciting. But anyways, I stepped on your toes. Tell us about Image Comics Void Rivals number one, Kevin.
It's maybe ingenious that... I'm assuming that these are all Kirkman's, or maybe the artist, the Lorenzo de Delisi, I guess. I assume that these are some of their original creations and not now partly owned by a megacorp.
No, for a bit of context for listeners, possible spoiler, the Hasbro license for some of their comic adaptions, namely Transformers and G.I. Joe, have been switched over to Kirkman's Image imprint. We have not yet seen those comics, but have we? Anyways, Kevin,
yeah. So
that's an important context.
Your own thing, and then you attach that to a property that everyone knows. So I mean, that could be kind of ingenious. That hey, you want to see Transformers and G.I. Joe? Also read about my new creation. I mean, not that Kirkman has trouble getting people to read his own stuff anyways, but...
Well, but isn't there like, we talk about the Kirkman Manifesto, isn't there the Hasbro Manifesto, though, that, like, you're screwed years later trying to reprint any of this stuff because you put your own characters in with Rom and with the Micronauts?
It kind of makes you wonder about that, right? Like, what kind of deal he has in place, because it's like... If it's that intertwined, how can you detach it?
I'm just saying it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah,
for sure. I thought the big spoiler, Kevin's hinting around, is one of those properties appears, but I felt it was somewhat siloed. Its appearance for a few pages was almost like, hey, this is the thing is here, but it doesn't make itself integral to the plot. Yeah. So I was like, it's smart for Kirkman to get all the fans of that property to buy this, but as of this issue, there's nothing that makes me think that property is going to intertie with this that closely. It was more like an incidental, they run into them. Remind me, as I used to joke, way back in the 80s, the Turtles used to do that, where they would let their characters appear in very tangential appearances for like a page in everyone's random comic.
Yeah.
Sort of
like
essential.
Savage Dragon shows up everywhere in the indie world.
Yeah, yep. but not as part of the thing, just as like we're passing through the issue. Almost like those old Marvel cameos where Thor is flying in the background of a Spider-Man comic and maybe he says something, but he's not going to help fight the bad guy type of thing.
Yeah.
The thing that stood out about me is we have a space scenario where we have two warring factions trapped in a faraway way, and they look to have one man and one woman, and I'm thinking set in space. This feels maybe a little saga-like, Kevin, maybe a little setup of Romeo and Juliet of these two getting together. I mean, eventually.
It could. I also thought of how that latest Rogue Trooper from 20,000 AD started, where he's just like thrown down into, you know, like they have that planet, and then there was like a war, and then everyone's like fighting over this one thing. I mean, that's where mine. I mean, it depends what the last thing you, like the most prominent thing that you saw with one idea that connects with, even if it isn't the like the primary force in that genre. Like we'll have another one of those, I think, this episode where I was thinking of something else, but I'm like, there could be like many other things, but that's what was on my mind at that time.
Well, I mean, it's a scenario we've seen, like the two warring factions trapped in an isolated scenario, and they have to work with each other to survive. That's not...
Well, I think before they get to the other properties, they're like, okay, we got to set up this scenario. make you care about these original things before we get to the other thing maybe that you want to see.
Well, and to be clear, that other thing has three pages. They discover it on this abandoned asteroid. He's like, oh my God, I've been trapped here, and he leaves them. So there's no... We're not going to see him again, I would think not, in this particular
book. They in that universe, though? That's the thing. Like, they went to this planet from that universe, so at some point, I figure that they're going to show up again. Or at least someone, something from that world.
It could, but that's where Steve's point about if they build the supporting characters, it would be way easier for have those characters interact with our void rival principles. Because it really is a, oh my gosh, you stumble, thanks for waking me up, I gotta go now. And you're like, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I thought he would then, their thinking was as well that he would transport them back to recognize space because they're, you know, mortal enemies and they're stuck off the charts completely, and they can't even working together to scrap each other's ships together, they just can't make one usable ship. And then, you know, they put all the old tropes about, you know, our hated enemies and, you know, stinking kraut, and the other guy calls them English dog and all that type of thing, but with space names in it. So I always think, I'm not familiar with Felici, so I liked it well enough. I enjoyed the Mateus Lopes does the colors, and I liked it for a space thing on an asteroid without a lot of atmosphere. He makes it very colorful by having the Earth be red, so even though they're, you know, it's all stars and stuff, all that red and everything gives you some color, and so it's not like, oh, the black bears in the black forest at midnight fighting type of thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it reminds me of. I mean, maybe a bit of like Mateo Scalera or something.
I felt kind of Matt Kinty, like a slicker version.
Really?
But the design, particularly when they take their helmets off and you see their faces.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that gave me that feel of it. That's the spoiler at the end, because they think they're radically, you know, they're each separate monsters. It's the Rom versus Direth or whatever. But they take their helmets off and they're both vaguely humanoid and look pretty much the same types of species. I don't know if they will or not, but again, I'm projecting that they're going to do a little, oh, the enemies bind together and end up falling for each other type of thing.
Yeah, it was fun. Good first issue.
Are you going to grab? I think I would grab issue two. I think I might get into this. They've announced plans to have, I think, maybe four or five titles between G.I. Joe and Transformers and this one. And I thought maybe if I can find them, I would jump on that train as another one of Andy's little summer projects.
Well, I know which one you're definitely grabbing on, so you might have two then. Because I know you're getting G.I. Joe 301.
Well, I'm certainly getting, yes, Larry Hama's continuing the A Real American Hero license, which went from Marvel and ended at 155 and then jumped to IDW. I think he also wrote some of the stuff at Devil's Due that was sort of a continuation, but when the license got to IDW, he picked it up with the Free Comic Book Day issue of 155 and a half, yeah, and kind of more directly continued right that Marvel run. So I don't know how, I mean, I guess we can all write our different dissertations on how to incorporate the Devil's Due license into that and those books. Kind of fascinating. For a comic book property, it's had a lot of different titles. In fact, Kirkman's announced, what, three, I think? I mean, I'm certainly on for The Real American Hero, but he announced a few other titles. I assume they're in the same universe, but not sure. I don't know. I don't try and learn too much ahead of time, as you guys know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everything's the same, which, I mean, it can work, but it's also weird.
It's funny because, and I know this is indie noise, but I'm the Marvel guy, right? So it's funny how Marvel created so many good characters that weren't their characters during that time period and that live on through licensing to other companies for now decades, and it really is off the strength of those characters that they created way back in the early 80s. Again, from ROM to the Micronaut characters to the G.I. Joe guys to the Transformers. It's pretty cool.
Various. And it's interesting how it all worked out differently. I feel like, for the most part, ROM and G.I. Joe had a more consistent team as far as the kind of minds behind it, where I feel like the Transformers have had a lot of different hands on the property, but it still hasn't hurt it. And any, like, you can build it any way. You can have, like, a Bill Mantlow build your whole universe and spin 100 issues, or Larry Hama do well over 300 issues. Or you can have, you know, Simon Furman do a chunk and other people do chunks here and there. It's interesting. It's a fun world. I'm hoping that they let it breathe and don't have too many titles. I'm a little bit worried about it getting kind of, to go back to Marvel, sort of Marvelized, where they'll just hammer something flat and it'll kind of lose its interest, to me anyways. It's hard because, you know, then you'll miss an issue here or there if there's four every week or whatever.
All right, you know what? Phil's not here, so I'm going to bring up a manga book.
Sure.
And from my mentioning it in passing and Kevin's reaction, I think it's going to be a manga book that Kevin doesn't approve of.
Well,
so I'm
curious.
The
funny thing is, I become the real indie snob when it comes to manga, right? Like, I have a pretty refined taste.
And I'm so educated in that stuff, especially the video anime stuff, that I don't know what's been made into a big property and what isn't. It was just something I came across and started reading, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. And that's Time Stop Hero, which is by Yasunori Mitsunaga, and it's from Seven Seas.
Seven Seas.
There's a bunch of these volumes, apparently. I've read the first two, and I have the next two on deck to check out. It's a fun manga where this dude is trapped in a world he never made or sought out, right? But realizes that all around him are the tropes of, like, a RPG role-playing world. It's like he sees a timer and assumes that he's got to, like, beat the clock by clearing whatever level he's on in time before it runs out. So that means all the, like, the standard video game type things. He's got to find NPCs, like other characters that have useful information or skills. He's got to figure out what the quest of the level is. He's got to gain the next necessary XP, and he's got to find and defeat whoever the boss is of the level. And it's like, oh, this must be the boss. And it's like, no, that can't be the boss. The timer's still going, you know, that kind of thing. So, but the extra wrinkle is that he's got this remote. It looks like a little, like, old Nintendo remote that stops time for, like, a really long period. It almost seems like he could do it for months and months. So now he can not only survive, but also succeed in otherwise seemingly impossible ways, because he went into town and he asked around and he got the key, you know, all while the bad guy was frozen. And by the time he got back to the encounter, he already had opened the treasure chest and gotten the weapon, or, you know, some kind of thing where he's messed up the dynamic of the world at play because he can bounce around between the gutters, right? He knows he's in a video game, even though it's not a video game. And there's no, we don't know how he got there, why he's there, what the deal is. It starts off, he's just there. And he comes across a couple of individuals that he sort of adds to his group. So he's got his small group, which is, you know, again, pretty similar to what we see in these games. Oh, and he also likes to look up girls' skirts while they're frozen, you know, and sometimes undresses them. But, you know, especially if it's like some stoic Red Sonja warrior type or some witchy woman evil person, it really throws them off their game when all of a sudden he snaps his fingers and, like, they're, you know, been down to their lingerie or something, or their undergarments. It's just big, dumb, clever fun. It's well illustrated with a touch of harmless titillation to boot. I don't know how many volumes will sustain my attention, but for right now, it's kind of fun.
How many volumes are you in so far, Steve?
Two. I've read two, and I have two in my possession to read. So I'm at least in for the first four. I don't know. I think I've seen that there's as many as 10. I don't know.
To keep with our theme of tying it back to Marvel, sounds a little bit like that other meta character you enjoyed, Gwenpool.
Yeah. Like, yeah, a character that knows. There's definitely that type of aspect to it, for sure. And so what's the deal, Kevin? Have you heard of this? Is this like manga for noobs or something, or what's the deal?
There is so much manga out there, Steve. And since I skew in a certain direction for manga, yeah, I never heard of that. Don't know anything about it.
Okay. It's got boobies, though. So there's that.
Boy, Phil is really going to miss out on this episode.
I know. He'd miss out on, be like, that's pervy or whatever.
Yeah, but then he'd be looking it up. He'd be like, oh, wonder how the art is on Time Stop Heroes. No, it's a fun book. It has all the extra characterization and interpersonal relationshipy stuff kind of worked into it, but it doesn't dote on that, and it kind of keeps things moving, at least so far, in a pretty fun pace.
Yeah, I think Seven Seas is one of those publishers that has some series with, like, really long names.
I awoke in a dungeon and now I can't find my keys.
Volume
yeah,
one. Exactly. I'm just like, okay, but that doesn't really do anything for me. I'm like, okay, if someone's enjoying that.
Hey, Something is Killing the Children isn't the shortest title either. So.
Yeah. No, that's a great title, though. And yeah, like, North American comics don't usually have descriptive titles like that.
True that.
Should I fire off another one here?
Go for it, Kevin.
Well, Somehow, I found my way to Global Comics with an X. And I'm not super familiar with the website. I think I've been there before. I think, like, there's been, like, previews and everything, but this was a full comic. So this was Grotesque, number one, by Wesley Griffith. And it has three different stories. I was kind of like, wow. Like, you're reading the first story, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be, like, the full issue or whatever, and then you get, like, three different, completely different things. So the first one's, like, a crazy, colorful, like, sci-fi thing. Like, and then these humans are just happy to get into outer space. Oh, yeah, it's exactly what we want, and we get to, you know, meet other species in outer space, the aliens and everything, and then, you know, your space is, like, your greens and your oranges and your purples and everything. And then one of the aliens shows up, and I'm like, something about this alien just totally reminds me of, puts me in the mood of that Star Trek original animated series.
That thing's pretty wacky.
Like, if it's not that, it's like the underwater guys from, like, Samurai Jack. But yeah, I think it's better if you go with, like, if you put your head back to, like, the 60s and 70s, I think that fits pretty well. And then the humans are just apparently weirdos that eat aliens.
I gotta eat something.
So I was like, all right, that was fun. And then there's, like, another story that is more of a, I think of, like a Stoko type of, like, what was the one I read where it was, like, that Egyptian god in, like Egypt, and it's, like, and it's, like, caveman sort of stuff. Like, this is, like, completely different, where, like, people are trying to survive, and you're like, oh, that's what the story is, and it's, like, that isn't what the story is. Like, there's there's like a couple different swerves there, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. Sci-fi-ish. But not like the same as the other one. And then the other one is just like totally stripped down, like just like a gag strip sort of, like just a couple drawings per page. And I was like, wow, that's quite an experience. So that was neat. I mean, I didn't get a physical copy of this. So, I mean, this reminds me of something where someone would be like a TCAF, and I would look at that and I'm like, that looks cool, and then pick it up. Like totally that type of comic. So it was enjoyable.
Wait, so this means you can send me a link of where to find this thing.
I believe I already sent you a link.
The show notes getting easier all the time.
This is true. And it looks like this is a good thing, too. At the end of the thing, it says, like, also available. And then they promo, like, their other things they have, like Thunder Beast, All Kinds of Hell, Easy Does It. So other interesting stuff. So I'd be like, oh, yeah. If I happen to run across this somewhere, I'm already primed. Primed to enjoy it. That's pretty prime. That's prime. The Thunderbolts. Transformers there. I'm always thinking of Thunderbolts, aren't I?
This, when Indy turned into a stealth Marvel Noise podcast. Well,
that's what happens when I come on.
I mean, that's different than it turning into a stealth DC show.
All right. Do you guys want a new comic book or an older comic book?
New comic.
Old comic. Right.
I'm going old comic then. Super Steve gets it. Now, I think you guys know I have a soft spot for comics from the 40s that are cheap. No. However, I will make a slight exception for early 50s, too. So, there was a very good copy of a 1950s comic book, and I was like, eh, it's worth $6. So I got it, and it's Stories by Famous Authors Illustrated, number 9, which is the Nicholas Nickleby adaptation. For those of you that don't know, back in the day before Cliff Notes and stuff, and you wanted to cheat, you could just read a comic book about thing. And this is... Now, they say it's very good. It's by Seaboard Publishers is the publishing company. And it's adapted by Dick Davis and illustrated by Gustav Schroeder. I am unfamiliar with the publisher or either of those two characters. For me, it's like a comic that's over 70 years old. There's just something cool about opening. And I will say... Okay, so the spine is complete. I mean, it's loaded with dings. There's maybe two or three small chips, some folds. Like, the pages are near white. This
Ew,
is
chips from the 40s?
Yeah. This is so much nicer than many. I'm so bad with grading. I would have had this as, like, a fine, I think, personally. I mean, maybe it got restored or something, but... I mean, what am I going to ding them for rusty staples? It's 70 years old. Of course the staples are rusty. So it's the story of Nicholas Nickleby. I'm not going to go into it. You know, this is the era of told pretty straightforward. So you're looking at essentially 6-panel grids, but they have some fun with it and do like a splash page or two to end it. Isn't that nice? A big splash at the end when they get married. They also have those weird text pieces at the end. One is about skiing, talking about how many people like to ski and sort of a weird fitness thing. And then they talk about how...
Hey, Warren Miller hadn't hit the slopes yet, so...
And then it's a whole bit about the historical Cinderella story from France by Charles Perrault and how they weren't glass slippers. Just a little one piece. And then a reprinting of Casey at the Bat. Well, I also found fascinating, except for the inside covers, which are ads for their in-house product, no ads in this thing. Which I wonder if that was so they could have this qualify as like an educational supplement or something like
that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm 1950, so this is before the Comics Code. Again, I kind of like the pre-Comics Code stuff, so I don't know. But it might have been a better sell to be like, hey, schools or whatever, you know, you can order this. And it's a great way for kids to learn about Nicholas Nickleby without having, you know, a below their reading grade or whatever. But yeah, it's just something, it's just in such a nice shape. I was like, this is a VG? God, you should see the some of the Silver Age Marvel stuff I have, which also is technically VG. And I'm like, that stuff looks like it went through a wood chipper. Yeah, I don't know. Somewhat tempted to have someone other than me look at this for a grading, particularly to see if maybe there's some restoration or something I'm missing. I can't, unless you literally use like a giant magic marker of the wrong color or whatever, I would never pick up restoration. Also, considering I paid $6, like this is not, and that grade point, you know, in the good, very good, this is, that's a fair price to pay. Like this isn't some super rare book from 1950 that everyone's looking to run down. I just was like, anytime I can get that book on the cheap and they're not totally shredded, because usually at the price point I am, you know, you find one in the dollar box or something, I'm always going to buy it. But those are usually, you know, the covers half off and that type of thing. Detached at all the staples and that. But yeah, so if you guys are in the market, you can look at Stories by Famous Authors Illustrated number 9, Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens.
Not to be confused with Classics Illustrated.
No. I was looking, I think I had mentioned in my origin story, someone gave me the Faust one. So I was kind of thinking about rebuying that thing again. But it's strangely more money than I want to pay.
What if you accidentally buy Faust instead?
that would probably be more fun. But
I still fondly remember the adaptation of a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. I read several classics that way, Andrew.
Faust just doesn't seem great for a small kid. And like the guy that sells his soul to the devil, it seems like a weird children's adaptation. But I just, as a kid, was always a little angry about those types of comics because I wanted dumb superhero comics. Whenever I got like real, you know, this is supposed to teach me something, I didn't want that. I wanted, you know, Spider-Man doing silly stuff.
Hey, Kevin, I read a anthology too for a quick hit here. It's from Oni called Xeno.
Oh, no, I also read this.
X-I-N-O?
Yeah. This is one of those things where I haven't bought anything from Oni in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was an anthology and everything, and I was like, oh, I guess that checks enough boxes like for a gamble. Because I'm like, I don't know who Phil Hester is. And
yeah,
and
you
it
were...
seems... I know a few other names in here, Shaky Kane.
You were thinking that's what I was thinking. You thought the same thing I thought was, well, worst comes to worst, it's got Shaky Kane in it.
I know. So I was just like, yeah, this is something where it could be something, and I was in the right mood. Like, let's see something different, right?
Yeah, it's 35 pages. It's a sci-fi anthology. There's 4 stories. It's got a really wildly textured alien cover by Matt Lesniewski.
Yeah, he does some wild stuff, some definitely different stuff.
The first one, most of the stories are, there's 3 10 pagers and a 5 pager, and the first one's by Melissa Flores with art by Daniel Irizarry, and it's about this blind dude who gets these implants and then he can see stuff that he would prefer not to see. Like, he can see what's really going on around us, and it's a lot.
Yeah, it's like either one of those Star Trek episodes or like a Doctor Strange comic, like all of those types of things.
Yeah, I feel it was like They Live.
Such a great movie.
Then the other one, next one's Jordan Thomas with art by Shaky Kane. And this is the other book with the rabbits.
Yeah, yeah. The rabbits are taking over the world, Andrew.
They're coming, Andrew. Actually, they might already be here. Don't trust anyone.
Wait, I'm a rabbit, so...
I'm saying this might be the trigger you need.
You know, that dude in the story is super paranoid, but that doesn't mean you're not paranoid for a reason.
Yeah, that's true. The short one is with art written and drawn by Phil Hester with this female commando on the run, kinda. And then the last one is Christopher Condon with art by Nick Cagnetti, the story of this adolescent taking taking gaming too far, Kevin.
Yeah, one of those. The funny thing is I was also familiar with the artist here because I did, what series was it? Now I'm blanking on it. But I remember it had like a Jim Rugg cover. But I think it, maybe it was from Oni Press as well. Or maybe it was self-published and then it came out again through Oni Press.
I like that these were all done in ones.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, and then it says next month that we have different creators. So a bunch of new and wild crazy stories again. So that's good.
All right, Andrew, we got to take a little time before the episode ends and celebrate the awesomeness of super creative dude Thane Benson here.
Yeah, we're still on. Both of us are independently on the train. The Benson train. I back every Kickstarter, even the card one that just ended.
Yeah, he just delivered.
He does.
Thane Benson just delivered on his second to last Kickstarter. He's had just had a subsequent successful Kickstarter wrap up. And clever dude. I love his renditions of monsters and his like kinetic little knight character and everything.
I also like the small folded ones. Are so clever in how he directs your attention, how the page turns happen and you fold it and unfold it. It really is a fun. I'm more used to, I guess, the traditional one where you kind of just fold it and unfold it. But this one, yeah. I felt kind of like you're really moving along with the character in a way.
And then you end up with this big centerpiece fold out where there's little numbers like a dot to dot to help you follow how the action follows through some type of giant land. It's just very creative. And he's had a bunch of those. He's also had a 3D comic, the 3D time travel adventure. He's had a digest, like choose your own adventure OGN called The Haunted Tower that also had a whole bunch of other little mini quests and games inside. And I also love his use of color, Andrew, how he manages to get it printed on all these different medium, whether it's newsprint or white paper. He really, everything is so wonderfully colorful. I really dig it.
I found the Choose Your Own was the first one I found. And if you go all the way back to episode 473 in May of 2021, you can hear me talk about it. And we've mentioned stuff since. But yeah, I've been on his train for quite a long while now. And I love that you always get nice commissions. I only got a few. I feel like I should get back on the commission train from him.
Yeah, I got one with his Quick the Clockwork Knight fighting a monster. And then I got one that was a Man-Thing. And then I just got one that was Fin Fang Foom, which was fun because he's obviously enjoyed doing his noodling on it. But the latest one is Quick the Clockwork Knight Gollum Dungeon, Dead Brick Press. I'm sure it's going to be available through his website. Again, he's Thane Benson. I believe it's thanebenson.com, if I'm not mistaken. But this Gollum Dungeon is a magazine-sized 11-page comic that ends with Quick entering the maw of this giant golem where there's a labyrinth inside, and then it becomes a tabletop game where the innards of the creature are the game board, and you get all these game tiles and cards and tokens and everything that you pull out and you cut out. It's really creative.
Very. And the character, the Quick the Clockwork Knight, is a pretty straightforward your adventurer looking to get into it, and he has his intelligent, sarcastic monkey sidekick. And on the inside panel explaining it, he jokes about how uncomfortable you may be cutting up your comic. And you want to know what? I am uncomfortable, Steve. It was just funny. He made a joke, and I'm like, am I going to cut up my comic, or am I going to, as he suggests, buy a second one to cut up instead?
Didn't you get a digital copy, too? You could always print it out.
Oh, look at Steve saving money with printing stuff out.
And then, as we alluded to, that he just had a subsequent Kickstarter too. His latest successful campaign took it even one step further, and it's like a monster rummy thing where he uses his really unique and fun monster designs to make like this monster mix-up game where you combine like the top half of a monster with the torso of another one with the legs of another one, and you can switch them all around. And I mean, that's really cool. So I back that. I'm on the train too, Andrew, for sure.
Well, so he populates his residence with kind of monsterish looking. So even if they're not, the residents of the town always look a little freaky too. You know, they're kind of warbly. For sure. It's not, even though it's set in this kind of D&D magic realm, there's no one that really looks, even Quick the Clockwork Knight doesn't look. He has those like almost machine man like thighs and biceps, just the long kind of pole sort of thing. So it's a fun, like, you completely soak into the world, like you said, with the color and all the fanciful designs of everything. So just because something looks like a monster doesn't automatically make them a bad guy. That's just, it's a world peopled by monsters.
True. Fun stuff, though.
Yeah. And the 3D comic was fun. The Choose Your Own Adventure. I have not been disappointed by any of these things. And as Steve said, there is a website. Also, whenever he does a new Kickstarter, he almost always adds add-ons of a lot of the older stuff, too. If you want to save and do it that way, because I'm sure he'll do more. I assume he's going to keep doing Kickstarter. I don't know.
And I like to, and as you originally said when you brought him up as a creator, that he also, not only could you get like a sketch or a piece of art that way, but you could also add on like getting the envelope decorated, and he does like a neat little monster design on your envelope and everything. It's fun. There's a few different ways to enjoy his creativity, which he's obviously bursting with.
Yeah, you know, this guy filled up like thousands of notebooks in high school too.
Him and me both.
All right, Kevin, you got a final shot for us?
I have two things, but one might be, you can use it as your final shot, I guess.
Whoa, look at Kevin taking command. All right, well, what's your own final shot then?
All right. Well, I got a little bit of Black Phoenix for you. The winter spring edition.
Is this more of your Black Hammer business, Kevin?
It's been a while since we've done that. I know they're going to be putting out a Black Hammer soon called The End of Black Hammer. Really The End, Part 1, the final season, final issue, Part 5.
The final
but
tour.
That's not what this is.
What is it then?
This is, if I was going to describe this, considering we read our, all those eight balls, this is another eight ball.
So but like an anthology. An anthology.
In the realm of what I'm into.
So an anthology is, by one creator? Type of thing?
Yeah, this is the comics and illustrations by Rich Tomasso from Floating World Comics. Also another good place like Silver Sprocket.
Okay.
I guess if you sort of have a store attached to your thing, like you get all this other weird stuff, right? You publish all these different things, and I'm like, yeah, I'm into that.
Store attached to your thing.
I do that just for Super Steve. But I guess these came out, like, I was wondering after a Spy Seal and all that, like, what? And I guess I could have researched it myself, right? Like, where is his next book? So it has a little thing in here that says, and I looked it up, since 2019 he's been serializing like a lot of stuff on his Patreon. Because I look at this, and then I've noticed there's other ones coming out, and I'm like, 140 pages or 60 pages? It's somewhere around there. I'm like, that seems like a lot. And it's just like random illustrations or ads, or like some of the stories are two pages, some are a lot of pages, and I'm like, this seems like there's too much here to just, and too random for you to just all of a sudden after a few years put something out, right? I'm like, maybe this came out somewhere, somehow, or it's online or whatever. And sure enough, so most of the stuff that's in here is like from the Patreon, from what I can gather.
Are you part of his Patreon, or you're just...
I am not.
Okay.
I always feel like I should sign up for like a few Patreons. It always seems like there's cool stuff going on there.
There is. I know Super Steve does. I'm just worried that I'm already into Kickstarter, and if I get into Patreon, then someone's going to come and take my house away.
Well, maybe you'd buy less graded books.
He's already buying the lowest grades he can.
Exactly.
There are no less grades, Kevin.
Or a few less G.I. Joes or something. But yeah, this is a bunch of crime, mystery, and Western stories. I mean, not a whole lot of Western stuff, and that's probably the thing I'm least interested in, but I'm like, yeah, like you get those old-fashioned, because some of them are done up like old-fashioned stories, like with more text, and some of them are more modern, but you know, in his style. And then they're not all like just black and white. Like some of them will be spot colored, or they'll just be like, oh, I'm using reds for this story, I'm using blues for this one, or then other ones will be full color. So it's just like a very nice variety of things. And if you want to see, I don't know, like a mobster story, or then there's one where, like the wife is like sleeping, and then they wake up, and then they're like secretly going to kill their husband or whatever. You know, it's good stuff. And I like all the fake ads, of course, with all the micro text and everything, and it says subscribe to blah blah blah. Like right out of the 50s and 60s, some of these ads. Electricity needs you. I will train you at home for $70 to $200 a week. Like, there's a whole bunch of fun stuff I got in here. I mean, more in my wheelhouse than those people in 8-Ball that are like things people say or whatever. Like, this is... I guess I like old ads better, right? Old fake ads?
Fake ads are always great.
For sure.
I mean, I assume some of these are fake ads. Maybe I'll find out that some of these are actually like real ads, but I'm sure takeoffs of old ads.
All right, Super Steve, you got one last one for us.
All right, I got one last one. It's an 8-issue series from AWA Upshot. And this one's mature readers, kids, but more for the language than anything else. And it's written by Garth Ennis, with art by Goran Sadzuka, and it is Marjorie Finnegan, Temporal Criminal. Have you heard of this one?
Hard to believe a Garth Ennis book has bad language in it, Steve. That's the part.
Yeah, right?
Shocking.
But it's just what it says it is in the title. She's a time criminal. She's got this small little fortress hideaway anchored off the time stream where she's hiding out, and her support is a disembodied head, Kevin.
So he's a disembodied head.
But he doesn't float in fluid. He's just like attached like by wires, and sometimes she has to just like hook him on her belt, and he kind of gets knocked around, and he's kind of grumpy because of that. But it gives her somebody to talk to, and somebody that wished that he could have a body to try to get it on with Marjorie, because she's a hottie. And, you know, she gets to hear complaints from somebody for everything she's doing. Oh, don't do that. What are you doing? That's the stupidest thing. He's a real curmudgeon. And Marjorie's sister is like a time sheriff type who's tracking her. So it not only has the whole, you know, bandit trying to escape Smokey thing, but there's this whole familial connection and a deep, history between them. It's more than a job for both of them, really. And you get to learn the backs, you know, with 8 issues, it really breathes. So you get to learn the backstories of everybody and where things went wrong and all that sort of business. And then there's this also major threat going on. The Lord of Evil, who looks like a dopey hipster, maybe like greaser from the 50s with maybe eats too much pizza. He's looking for this document that Marjorie has that would let him undo religion by bringing to light a whole bunch of dirty truths, and by inserting them into the religious texts from the beginning, it would poison them all and the whole timeline, so that by the time that we get to now, things would be very different. And he hangs out with this dude that you would think is the devil because he looks like the devil, but he's not the devil. That guy's more like the devil. The guy who looks like a devil, he's just Stan, not Satan. He's just Stan, and he's Marjorie's ex-boyfriend, and there's a whole history there that gets explained, that it all makes sense, but it sounds wacky, and it is wacky. But it's Ennis, so there, it's really well written. There are a lot of fun character moments. There's chase scenes through time, confrontations that really mean something because of how things have been built up. So some great story beats, fun knocks on religion that Ennis likes to do, right? I mean, what else would you expect from an Ennis book? It's a lot of fun.
I wouldn't expect time after time, that's for sure.
All right, Kevin, hit us with the last one. You get the last All word. Right.
I believe you're in on this, Andrew. So we have Wild Strawberry.
I'll let you. We have chapter one digitally available to us at Viz.
Yeah, I kind of looked at the app and I was like, why is it not on my app? And I feel like Viz has launched like three different apps now. Like, it seems like they have a Shonen Jump app, and they might have a Mature app or something. I just know some of the stuff sometimes isn't available on the app, and you have to read it on the website. So I was first going to read it, like, just lying down on the couch, and I was like, I can't find it. So I went to desktop to read this. So it's only the first chapter, and
I believe Eerie Yonemoto. Right? Is that the person? Did I get it right?
I mean, I guess. Surprise? I mean, I'm not great with those names, and it doesn't seem familiar to me. But whenever they have like a first chapter up on the website for free, I mean, it's always a good sampler because you get that like if it would have been in the magazine, you get like 80 pages. So,
this is long, and that kind of, it's the style where it's the super super detailed backgrounds. Rendered small. It looks almost like a photo or converted into drawing. Like it seems like an insane amount of time. If there wasn't some cheat, someone spent a crazy amount of time. It opens in a supermarket just noodling all the different packages and crap on shelves, or there's lots of plants and just all the shading and individual leaves. Like, it's a weird, I mean, it looks very nice, but what a crazy amount of work.
Yeah, I don't know if they still do it this way, but like I remember some older comics where it would be like the photo background. Like, I think that was like either Monster, like one of those early ones I read, and I'm like, wow, the backgrounds are sort of like that photo look. And then, like, it would be, like, the assistants are, like, doing the backgrounds. And then, like the primary author that's listed on the book is, like, drawing all, like, the characters in front. So I don't know if this is that's how this was done. And it's funny when, you know, people are in comics especially, like, acutely aware of, like, creator rights and everything, but like, I always think of those studios where they have assistants and you usually don't find out. Like, you're buying it for the name on the cover, like, supposedly or whatever, but, like, there could be all these other people involved that aren't really listed. You don't really know what the deal is. So, I mean, it could be one person, but, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if like, an assistant or something is, like, doing all the background stuff either digitally or, like, drawing all that in. Well, they're just doing the main figure. Because, yeah, it is getting super detailed. Although it might be more exciting to draw some of the crazy, like, strangled trees and people? Well, with exploding heads and everything?
What lends me also to the background is they decided to put, like, a blank halo around all the figures, which also lends it to the kind of, it's been dropped in a way. Because they all have, you know, like a easily visible, like, white layer that just wipes out any background. So it does feel like they're sort of dropped in. So while it's very lush and pretty, that, and I don't read enough manga to know if that's just what everyone does, but to me, that was a little distracting because it feels, I don't know, like a 3D comic, but the 3D isn't working type of thing. In a way that I was like, yeah, this isn't... The other problem is it's set in a post-apocalyptic scenario where people wear masks and you have to get vaccinations, and that part of the story meant I'd started disengaging as the... I'm just not really in the headspace for that right now. I don't know why, Kevin. It's just not...
I mean, the thing that was more on my mind was The Last of Us, because I'm just like, I mean, it doesn't, as it gets more into the story, like, it doesn't really go there. Like, it's not that type of world. But the beginning where it's like a, it seems like it's a desolate, like, I would say even more like it becomes like a dystopian type of thing. But it's not like the whole world is destroyed and, oh, there's a couple people trying to exist. I mean, it seems more like that at the beginning.
Well, certainly the color spread, which feels very digital, kind of, and when they drop the two characters in, it's basically a skyscraper, but they're all overrun by plants. That was the apocalypse was plants. That feels very like, okay, this was not done, rendered the same way. In fact, the little bit of color I found more distracting than enhancing, I guess. I don't know. Kevin, I know that's traditional. It's 90% black and white, and you drop a little color in on a few pages, but it's... In this instance, I was like, it kind of took me... Again, because I'm not used to the genre, those techniques sometimes can take me out.
Well, I'm sure if this... When this comes out in a digest, I mean, unless they spring for the color... I mean, you'll see those pages and you'll be like, oh, why do these look like painted or different, or like they have different tones or something? And it's like they always, like, that's a good thing about digital. Like, you can see the color pages. Like, you know how many times I've seen like those black and white pages that don't look like the other pages? I'm like, yeah, that's because those are the color pages that they didn't use the extra dollars to put the color in for those few pages. Oh, actually, I like how they do it, though, when it's... I mean, it's not done as well here as some other areas, but, like, they have the one object that's color on the page of black and white, like, especially if a story calls for it.
Yes, and it can work quite well. It just... It reminded me of those English reprint comics I would read, where they would just pick the ones in the middle, which sometimes made sense and sometimes it didn't. It was just that's where the color went in, whether it was the best use or not. And the white halo is not around every figure. I'd say it's used about 80-90% of the time, which I think might make it more distracting, like if it was done all the time. So I don't know if it's something of how they're integrating the background and the characters, or if each time is a choice. I don't know. I don't know enough about manga to know, you know, every type of comic has a conventions to use to portray 3D, you know, it's a 2D drawing meant to portray a sequence of events, so obviously there is conventions used. And it was weird when they did the white around like a plant or something, which again makes me think, oh, maybe that was drawn separately and dropped in. I don't know.
I'd be curious to see what the process was. But what they really use the color to show the tree bursting out of who I assume is going to be the lead character of, or maybe one of this book, where people are like getting in infections and everything.
Yeah, the plants have taken over. They can feed on people. Sometimes it's symbiotic. You have to keep getting vaccinations to avoid it. It's pretty stuff, but it does feel kind of, I don't know, like I said, the other thing is the kind of strict geometric perspective on it also lends it to that. This is some kind of more referenced or background, because the characters don't always feel that when it's just a character panel. But if there's a building or an object or something, it's got that, you know, straight line, straight box perspective type of thing.
You know what's so weird? It just jump back a little bit. Is when, right in the beginning, when that guy shows, like, the flower, but he is shoplifting first. Since it's the very beginning of the story, and I don't know how this works, at first I thought he had turned what he shoplifted into a flower.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, when I saw the mask, it immediately made me a little like, oh no, this is going to be some pandemic
thing.
See,
that wouldn't trigger me in like this type of story. I guess I'm like, oh, it's a manga. I don't know. There's bandits or what? I don't know what I was thinking. But once you get into the vaccination and into the city, I'm like, yeah, this is definitely one of those things where it's like they're going to scrutinize everything. And if they find any remnants of any vegetation or anything, they're going to burn it to the ground.
Yeah. Hey.
It'll be a scorched earth policy.
People never want to say when they got bit by the zombie, Kevin.
I know. That's a terrible thing. And then they, like, get adopted, and then those people are, like, the mushroom head, flower head people.
It does seem like this would be definitely a cool video game, back to your Last of Us comment.
Yeah, I mean, it does have a little of that sensibility. Like, I can't, like, get rid of that. Having that show still sticks with me, so like seeing this, it's just like that's definitely there.
Yeah, I like
they like get discovered, and you get into like the sort of the police brutality element where you have this force of people going around and burning everything out, and you know the girl that's I guess sort of in control of their like mutation type of thing is gonna fight back, because they have some say. It does, like, it seems like other people's heads just explode or like their fungal infection is too much, but it seems with her, like, she's a special variant that has a say in the matter. So I guess that's where this will go. So you haven't run into any fungal infections or anything in your neck of the woods, Andrew?
I think they have a cream for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's certainly a lot of that around here, but I don't want my personal business on the podcast, so.
No, I just, along with that, they've had those shows on of like, could what happened in this TV show happen in real life? And then there's like, there is like crazy, like, fungal things, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like in the United States and other countries, but hasn't made its way to Canada yet. And it's like, but maybe in another 50 years. And I'm like, oh great, yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Then you'll be a fun guy.
Yeah, I liked the video game Last of Us. It was fun. I watched the show too. You know, I know people love that game. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my favorite game of all time. So, but you're right. These share sensibility. Are you going to read more chapters, Kevin? I think I'm probably.
I mean, most likely, since it is interesting enough and it's free. The thing is that I have to remember. Sometimes I'm terrible. Like, I'm really bad with digital comics. Like, I am with like OGNs. My brain just isn't there. Like, it's something you got to remember to do. And you got to remember to check and whatever and keep up with. Like, if it's a monthly single and I get it at the shop, like, it's easy for me to process that. But we'll see if I remember.
All right. I think that's a pretty good episode, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Indie Comic Book Noise. Stay safe out there. Kevin, are you using your catchphrase this year?
Oh, yeah. The catchphrase for this year is, if you want justice for Abbott, give the show a 5-star review.
All right, and enjoy those summer breezes, folks. Thank you.
Later.
the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. The paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Days of summer, the jasmine's in bloom. July is dressed up and playing her tune. And I come home from a hard day's work, and you're waiting there, a care in the world. See the smile waiting in the kitchen, food cooking on the plates for two. Feel the arms that reach out to hold me in the evening when the day